century, America has become a nation on wheels. We ride on wheels to work, to shop, to play, to go about any place we want to go. We depend on wheels to bring us the food we eat, the clothes we wear, the things we use. But when we depend on wheels, we depend also on highways and roads and streets for the wheels to roll on.
Boy, roads are a part of American culture. In the mid-1920s, though, the U.S. had only 250 auto trails for cars. That's a little film excerpt from the 1950s that talks about the genesis of the Superhighway Program, begun in 1956 by the Eisenhower administration, which has totally changed America. Earl Swift has written a comprehensive examination of these roadways called The Big Roads, The Untold Story of the Engineers, Visionaries, and Trailblazers who created the American superhighways. He joins us from Virginia. Earl, good morning.
Good morning, John. How you doing?
So what interstate are you nearest to this morning?
I'm about a mile and a half from Interstate 264, which is a branch off of 64.
Let me play you a little cut from that film we were just listening to. They described the congestion, which, Earl, was costing America after World War II millions of dollars. A crisis, and so there had to be action. And here's the congressional response.
Congress responded with the Federal Aid Highway Act of 1956, providing the staggering sum of $51 billion to be spent by the states on highway construction by 1971.
Staggering $51 billion, Earl. Times have changed.
It's almost quaint, isn't it?
Exactly. Well, who was, $51 billion was a big deal back in 1956. Who suddenly joined up to actually create this highway system and make it a reality?
Well, 56 is a year that's fastened on by a lot of people, and as is Eisenhower's administration as kind of the roots of the system. But it really goes back 12, 15 years before that and into the Roosevelt administration. And it was an evolution more than a precipitous event that brought about that Federal Highway Act that you just heard reference to.
And indeed, some of the evolution took place here in the state of New York with Robert Moses creating the parkway system and developing Long Island and the park system in southern Long Island. I mean, the road system was really about the American middle class having a way to take a vacation.
It was, and it was about getting farmers a way to get their produce to market, which was a tremendous headache in the days before the automobile. And it also tapped into a kind of a uniquely American desire for an individual and completely unfettered way to move. I mean, people, of course, could get around in trains back then, but there was a huge desire to be able to get out on your own, to have a steed.
Right, exactly, which is exactly what some of the roads were, horse trails in the beginning. How much of the interstate system is based on old, almost colonial-era routes, and how much of it was brand new?
There is very little that's brand new. In fact, I can probably name on one hand the legs. I can name just one, and that's the San Rafael Swell in Utah, I think is the only completely pioneer component of the interstate highway system.
So
that's Interstate 70.
No kidding. So that's the only place that wasn't based on either a previous trail that might have had, wagon wheel tracks on it, or, we still have the name of the Post Road, which runs from New York to Boston and has become, I believe, parts of I-95.
Yeah. Yeah. Interstate 81 is a good example. It's one of the principal highways that connects the industrial Northeast with the South and with the West eventually. Kind of cuts a diagonal along the Appalachians. And it began as a buffalo trail. The Shawnee and Cherokee adapted into a hunting trail. The early German and Scottish settlers that moved west of the Appalachians turned it into a plank road eventually. It became a turnpike after that. It became U.S. 11 in 1926, and then finally in the late 50s, early 60s, it became I-81.
What was the engineering challenge of making an interstate system that is so standard across the country, but yet has to deal with very different climates?
Well, that's a good question. The design parameters were really developed in the mid-40s, and safety, of course, is what drove the that those engineers had for a sameness throughout. They wanted a system that looked exactly the same in Connecticut as it did in Southern California. And they pretty much achieved it. The system's basic design guidelines are that it's four lanes wide at a minimum, two in each direction. It's each lane is 12 feet wide. It's got a 10-foot outside shoulder at a minimum, a 6-foot inside shoulder, a median of 12 feet at least. And, you know, the signs are regulated. The type style on the signs are regulated. Every single particular, the height of the grass that's cut on the median is regulated. When you look at as you mentioned, that it crosses through so many climates, it's stunning that they were able to achieve the sameness. At one point, it crosses a swamp in Louisiana on 20 or more miles of causeway.
Sure, that's the Alligator Alley route down there in Florida. Earl Swift, who's the author of The Big Roads, The Untold Story of the Engineers, Visionaries, and Trailblazers Who Created the American Superhighways. Of course, today, in the 21st century, the interstate system is the focus of criticism for making us much too dependent on the automobile and, as a result, fossil fuels.
You do hear that lament, yes. Whether the highway is a big piece of that, whether it's a cause or an effect is a debate.
All right, that's a debate, but there's certainly no debate that the people who developed the highway system could never have imagined texting on the roads, correct?
No, they couldn't have imagined when they developed the thing that it would become as heavily used as it has. I mean, we have 4 billion miles of road in the United States, about two-thirds of which is paved, and the interstate highway system accounts for only 47,000 miles of that, so a little over 1%, 1.2% of the total. And yet 25% of our driving is done on the interstates.
And that
would have boggled the minds of the people that came up with this system.
We got to go, Earl, but you always obey the speed limit when you're on the interstates, right?
I try to.
Earl Swift, author of The Big Roads, Untold Story of the Engineers, Visionaries, and Trailblazers Who Created the American Superhighways. You going on a trip this summer? What road do you love? Earl Swift, thanks so much for being with us. We're asking our listeners to describe their least favorite or favorite stretches of roads. Robert from Tacoma, Washington texted us this. My least favorite stretch of road is I-5, the corridor from Seattle to Olympia. Least courteous drivers I've ever encountered. Everyone has a cell phone attached to their ear. I've driven that stretch. That is a nasty stretch of road. Call 877-8-MY-TAKE or show us the road you hate or love by downloading our iPhone app on thetakeaway.org or at iTunes. I'm John Huckenberry. Celeste Headlee is on the road herself today. She'll join us from our partner WGBH up the road on I-95 in Boston tomorrow. This is The Takeaway.
Wait to get on the road again. On the road again.